This coming July will mark the 40th anniversary of the beginning of a war against Afghanistan begun by the U.S. that was at the time intended to give the Soviet Union, in the words of Zbigniew Brzezinski, the former National Security Advisor, its own Vietnam. The U.S. got directly involved in Afghanistan after the 9/11 attacks in 2001. That now is the longest engagement of troops in active duty in the history of the United States. On Monday, the special envoy of Russia's president to Afghanistan, Zamir Kabulov, held a press briefing that followed the second meeting of consultations on Afghanistan at the level of deputy foreign ministers and special envoys, which was held in Moscow Friday with the participation of Taliban representatives. This is the Russian president's special envoy to Afghanistan, Zamir Kabulov.
Welcome this. We would welcome the representative of Afghan High Peace Council, and to see more broad representation, we propose to invite a number of outstanding political figures of Afghanistan. Among them, we have, for example, ex-president Hamid Karzai, ex-counselor of Afghan president on national security Hanif Atmar. Among them were representatives of Tahazari or Tajik political elite, and of course from Pushtu political establishment, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar and other representatives. And this preliminary work has shown that almost all potential candidates were ready to participate, but we were quite surprised when, after this, president of Afghanistan, being quite nervous, began to oppose to the invitation of these political figures, who are, of course, legal political leaders of Afghanistan, political figures of Afghanistan. He said that this may somehow be seen by Kabul as an interference into internal affairs of Afghanistan. Well, you may follow these political figures in Afghanistan, and you know their reaction, that they do not accept this approach, and they think that the issues of peace in Afghanistan will not be resolved by the government. And the armed opposition, being represented by the Taliban, don't want to talk to this Afghan government, and they insist that they should be full-fledged participants of this process. And we, of course, we cannot oppose this, because this is a sovereign right of Afghan people. And we know that both the Afghan people and some of our Western colleagues, they do like to refer to so-called Afghan-owned and Afghan-led processes, as we say in English. But at the same time, they tend to forget that this is not the Afghan government-led and owned process, because this is the whole Afghanistan process, and the Taliban is a part of the Afghan society, so this should be owned by all the Afghans who want to engage in such kind of negotiations. Nevertheless, we have what we had. At the end of the day, quite representative organization has arrived. All the four deputy president have arrived, and the president of this council been in Iran trying to work on the issue of Afghan refugees in Iran. This is a separate topic. So we had four deputy presidents of this Afghan High Peace Council, and by insistence of the Afghan ambassador in Moscow, he himself made part of the Afghan delegation, and the participation of an ambassador, this is we may call it an official recognition, because it's an official representative of a country. Well, you've seen what we had, so, well, at least you were able to film it. As for the substance of our consultation, according to traditions, this agreement of all the participants of Moscow Forward consultations, we will not be able to disclose all the details of the talks that took place. Yes, we can make our comments, which was done by the foreign ministry, I'm sure you've seen the press release. So, well, I of course understand that you have some more concrete questions. I will be ready to take them, but please bear in mind what I've just said. I just have no right, in accordance with our agreements, to disclose all the details. I'll try to be as open as possible, but of course, bearing in mind the limits of the conditions of Moscow formal consultations. Now I'll be ready to take your questions. Please, you can make your questions and please introduce yourself. So please. Could you please say those consultations that we've seen? This is not a breakthrough, but still there is a positive trend. The delegations have come that were presumably from the Afghan government and the delegation of the Taliban. From your point of view, what was positive about those consultations? So they maybe refused it, they didn't want to meet, they didn't want to come to an agreement, and the Taliban said that they don't want to talk to Afghan government. And whom do you represent, sorry? Well, because you talk to him, well, whom do you represent? I'm from Russia Today TV channel. Thank you so much. Well, I'm trying to avoid such words as breakthrough or ice-breaking or any of this kind, speaking using language of your RT TV channel. But truly, this meeting was quite unique because for the first time in such a broad international format, which we've seen, and we've seen the delegates from the Taliban. As I mentioned at the outset, we bear this in mind, but this was not our ultimate goal, to launch the direct talks at these precise consultations, but the fact itself that for the first time representatives of the two opposing parties in Afghanistan have come to one room and were ready to talk to each other, this was first modus, but still the first step towards further full-fledged peace talks in Afghanistan. That's what we were bearing in mind. There was too much blood shed in Afghanistan, and it will be quite unrealistic from our side to expect that it will be simple and easy to launch everything towards peace agreement between the parties. We, of course, understand it well, and we do understand it. This is not only about Afghanistan. This is true for each country which had crisis situations or situations even worse. This always takes some time, and it requires different rounds of talks and negotiations. But the importance is that the first step was done. According to this Chinese proverb, the road by 10,000 miles will be covered by a man who made his first step. So your next question, please. Mr. Kabulov, I'm from Kommersant newspaper. My name is Kirill Krivosheyev. Many experts on Afghanistan say that the political office of Taliban in Doha is an organization which does not represent the whole Taliban movement, maybe just one of its fractions. But Ashraf Qadri is the supreme institution of the Taliban. Well, my question is as follows. Russia, Uzbekistan, the USA, and other countries which are trying to organize a kind of a format of negotiations between Afghan parties, they are talking to a Taliban movement in Doha. Is Russia trying to establish some contact with the Talib from Afghanistan or Pakistan from Quetta? Did you talk to those representatives from the Taliban? Well, the political office in Doha represents the supreme leadership of the Taliban movement, so-called Shkveti Shura. We don't know where do they reside, but they are being called as Shuraf Kvetian. That's the first point. And according to information that we have, this was confirmed to us by their supreme leadership. And the political office, on behalf of the Taliban leadership, they have to contact with the representatives of foreign states. So we do not have this question of legitimacy of the representation of the Taliban movement. Another issue that was raised by you, that from the Taliban movement, being a military political organization, it is not 100% unique or homogeneous, it has different directions in itself, different fractions. A part of this movement is for the war till the end. Another part of this movement is willing to resolve the issues that they have on their way to negotiate, through the negotiations, or they are for some kind of combination of war decision with a political decision. But the question is that the Taliban movement and its spokesman, who is speaking on different websites and in videos, he is confirming that the political office in Doha is fulfilling the instructions and orders from the High Council. So this is this from where we proceed. Your next question, please. Good afternoon, my name is Елена Деслова, I'm from Anadolu Agency. Mr. Kabulov, after consultations, representative of the High Peace Council, Abdurrahman Salim, has said that this was not the first meeting with the representative of the Afghan government. There was consultations in Qatar, for example. What's the difference between those meetings? Well, the difference was that it was a public meeting. It was open. Yes, they met in Qatar, in Ankara, but I don't remember any information from your colleagues about this meeting. So this is a major difference. Yes, we know about these closed meetings that were held between Taliban and the Afghan government, not only in these countries and cities mentioned by you, in other rather popular cities in this region. Moreover, I can say that many countries, including Western countries, unofficially have met with the Taliban in Doha. Speaking about last publicly announced contacts of Americans in Doha, but they are only announced, as we've been told. They had around 10 close consultations with Americans. So this process is a natural one when countries are trying to, and we want to believe in this, they are trying to stimulate both parties, I mean the Taliban and the Afghan government, to sit to the negotiations table without prerequisites. That's natural, normal, when influential actors are trying to have consultations with both parties. I don't see anything bad about this. Please, your next question. Mr. Kabulov, because we've talked about the USA, you at the beginning said that Kabul was ready for direct dialogue in Moscow with the Taliban, but then something maybe has changed and drastically changed. Does Moscow think that some third power has influence upon their decision? Well, not something has changed and unexpectedly. As for Kabul was ready, yes, you are right. But on this with these conditions, that these negotiations will be with the Taliban, and the Taliban has always said that they don't want to talk to this Afghan government, so we haven't seen anything brand new. Well, I understand what you mean, because the Americans were the first to avoid sending the official delegation to this meeting, to these consultations, and the Afghan government has somehow followed their older brother And Big Brother, well, but I leave this for you to decide. That's the world we live in. But still, we do want to deal with the sovereign governments that are guided by national interests of their countries in their actions. Another question, if you allow me. Today, there is an ISIS, there is a terrorist organization of that kind. ISIS has lost many territories in Syria and in Iraq. And now we hear that this terrorist organization is trying to revitalize their sleeping cells in other countries. Afghanistan is among them. Can this influence on this peace talks in Afghanistan, and how this terrorist organization may use this divide in Afghan political society? Well, another unique moment, unique element of these consultations by the closed doors of all the parties, because all of them, all these two delegations are Afghan delegations, whatever names they had. The uniqueness is that both delegations were against ISIS decisively, and they said that there is a necessity to fight against this international terrorist organization. That's taking part in reaching the peace in Afghanistan. Another point of mutual understanding of the two opposing sides, the common enemy, the fact that ISIS has appeared thanks to current divides and splits in Afghanistan between Afghan people. This fact has been established because thanks to this, ISIS quite easily has rooted in this region. They are actively engaging in creating and elaborating and developing their network, not only sleeping cells. Those cells are not sleeping for a long time. They've been woke up. But we mentioned many times, I would like to point this out again, for some reason, main forces of the ISIS are trying to create a network along the northern border of Afghanistan with Central Asian countries. And among the fighters, the major part are descendants from the Central Asian countries and Russian North Caucasus and the Volga River region. This by itself speaks about the objectives, I mean the terrorists, and the objectives and aims that they have formulated by their external sponsors. As you may understand, any organization, being terrorist or another type, requires substantial financial resources. The ISIS that has appeared in Afghanistan 3 years ago has become to develop their activities when they were dominating in Syria, when they controlled different banks, when they had major financial sources thanks to the illegal oil export, including in Iraq, and they had major financial resources using which they were able to make that breakthrough in order to amplify their organizations. Then, when they were deprived of these resources, this process has entered into a stalemate. It has not stopped. And this, of course, a positive fact, but our task is to put an end to those processes. And we hope that Afghan government will be in charge of this, as well as international troops that are there, that are stationed there for the fight against international terrorism. We've heard the criticism towards them, more than in one case, and we, of course, are waiting for some concrete steps from them. Next question, please.
To maybe Mami Beach, could you explain the question regarding the participation of the United States?
Actually,
it was a political advisor of the U.S. Embassy. He is a Korean by nationality. At the very last moment, they declared that he would participate in the meeting instead of the representative from Washington. So he was the one who participated. Next question, please. Let's balance, maintain a proper balance. Russia Today.
Замир Набиевич, все-таки вопрос, зачем приезжали талибы в Москву?
The question is, why did the movement of Taliban come to Moscow?
Было понятно, они до этого говорили, что их интересовали такие вопросы, как освобождение их, например, prisoners,
liberating the prisoners,
travel ban,
or canceling the travel ban.
Было такое ощущение, это открытое и публичное впервые, как вы сказали, мероприятие такого уровня международного.
Like
но оно, в общем, на руку талибам, да? То есть они все-таки приезжали для того, чтобы помочь как-то мирному урегулированию в Афганистане, или у них больше свои задачи на первом месте стояли?
Я вначале сказал, зачем они приезжали.
Это право любой из афганских сторон использовать такую мировую встречу для пропаганды своей позиции. Приезжали они в первую очередь для того, чтобы мы с вами и другие страны, особенно региональные, те, кто не поддерживает прямого контакта с
мировыми талибами,
могли напрямую изложить свою
support.
Позицию. Что они сделали? Я,
the movement of Taliban could declare their position,
and they've already
exposed their plan of action. They said they were ready to talk with the Afghan government after they reached an agreement with the United States about the withdrawal of all troops from Afghanistan. As a confidence-building measure, the Taliban required the liberation of all prisoners, political prisoners, and the cancelling of all sanctions against them that were imposed in 1997,
and
also the sanctions
envisaged
by the UN resolutions. So our
противоборствующие
was
стороны
to
for
put the opposing
sides
to the negotiated table and to start the process. That's why we should make those parties accustomed to this process. During
a
working lunch, I observed the two Afghan delegations to freely contact, freely communicating, and they were discussing
all
issues, and no one could distinguish between them. They are all Afghans that are divided by the circumstances. That's why when you give them a chance to talk directly and to come to terms, this is the first step. This is about creating a conducive environment, environment of trust. There is much bloodshed between them, but we should start this. All our partners who participated in that, this was their own aim. Good morning, I'm Yulia Natarova from the Japanese television. How do you see, how do you perceive the role of the United States in all this story? What story do you mean? In Afghanistan or in the negotiating peaceful process? In this process of negotiations between the Taliban and the government, our American colleagues
Если что-то происходит, они должны обязательно ее возглавлять.
Are used to leading the process.
Это не важно, куда они
no matter
этот процесс. What they where they are leading this process to,
but they want to have this leading role.
And their jealousy was felt from the very start, that we tried to help them overcome.
They were urged to be constructive.
If their rhetoric
that about peace and reconciliation in Afghanistan is true, that they should join this process. The United States had enough time, 18 years, to do a lot that was expected from the very start.
In 2001,
the Taliban was not represented in Afghanistan,
but now
it's 60% controlled by them. So is that the result of the 17 years of NATO and the US in Afghanistan? It is not resolving the problem, but just compounding these difficulties. That's just an interest of Russia. Afghanistan is a close country to our territory, and that's why our interests in security are placed high, and
we
just made clear to the United States that their policy is not working, and that's why we are for a regional approach to the settlement of the Afghan issue. Because only the regional powers, including Afghanistan, are interested in the settlement of the crisis. All other countries would thank them for the aid, for a constructive one. That's where the problem is, but we hope to change this. During his election campaign, President Trump made a hint on that issue, and he said that he would not understand why America spent so much money and shed so much blood in Afghanistan. So we hope that it will be better, and we have patience.
Mr. Kabulov,
could the Taliban demand direct talks with the government?
They call
themselves the Emirate, and they think that they can demand these contacts. The Taliban has demonstrated by the blood to demand. If anybody questioned that right and had their troops there, why didn't they defeat the Taliban? But the West failed and cannot recognize it. That's why we have to come to terms.
Maybe we could take
the use of force approach,
but
these people can say that they do not care about the Afghans dead over this period and the future of the country. What about the next meeting? And did Taliban and Kabul confirm their further participation? I would say that the tradition
of the format is that we do not set the exact time and the place of the next meeting, but all parties agree that this format should be continued, and all representatives, including TALEX and regional representatives, they said that Russia should take upon the initiative to organize such meetings.
За Москву, когда говорим московский формат, у нас в конце концов есть шанхайская организация.
Actually, Moscow is not the most important the only place where it could be held, like the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Just the name.
В принципе, любой из постоянных участников
формата, any of the permanent representatives of the format,
может предложить свою столицу в качестве места проведения.
As a venue of the next meeting, and this should be approved by others because we have a principle of consensus in the Moscow format.
So, answering your question,
yes, the Taliban and they are ready. For this, they liked this format and they are ready to participate in the future meetings, but we'd like the official representatives, High Peace Council, to participate in these meetings because it would give a special status to all the agreements reached and all these people. In this delegation, they are all Afghans.
Пожалуйста.
Yes, please.
Просто для уточнения.
Just to clarify.
Замир Набиевич, то есть мы ожидаем второй раунд.
We're expecting
первый шаг,
second round.
Сказали, да?
This is the first step. As you said.
Это же второй.
Yes, that's the second round.
Он не остается первым. То есть мы ожидаем второй раунд и в ближайшее время.
And we're expecting this second round in the nearest future. This actually will be a third one.
Вы дайте нам немножко перевести дыхание после
Just like, let us just have some rest before after this meeting. And to think about a new start, you think. Actually, we have we are speaking about the new year, we have Chinese New Year and other days. We would just meet when the time comes. So my question is, was any plan or proposal announced by the Russian Federation regarding these talks? Yes, we had such talks about the roadmap. We had no concrete proposal. This is an idea that deserves attention, and we'll think about that, but much would depend on other circumstances, because this is not scientific gathering. That's why we should take into account the political situation in Afghanistan in this or that period of time. We will hold different events in Afghanistan next year. We have our presidential elections.
If the government is replaced,
then the situation would be different. I do not have any plans regarding the events and the changes that might occur. We've announced the main idea. That we should think first and then do. Do you have any other questions?
Замир Набиевич, вот все-таки в этом году, пожалуй, усилиями узбекского президента особый формат взаимодействия, ну, как бы, стартовал в Ташкенте.
А вы кого представляете?
Коммерсант.
Made a new format
и вот, когда этот формат
new start. And this spring, there was a conference in Tashkent. How is Moscow assessing the efforts made in this direction? And does Moscow regard this as a competing format because the Taliban actually first came to Tashkent?
You
said this, but you avoided just one important moment, that Mr. Lavrov also took part in that Tashkent meeting, and we support this format, and we are in favor of the neighbor taking this responsibility. We're expecting all neighbors of Afghanistan to take such constructive, important steps that, together with our efforts, would create the quality rather than the quantity of our actions. And we've already coordinated our steps and discussed our steps within different formats, and we are also cooperating with Tajikistan, Iran, and China, India, and other countries. Next question.
Mr. Kabulov, could you comment the
the number of the participants and the representatives of the countries? Why these people participated in this event?
The issue is that initially we had 6+1 format, Afghanistan, all the neighboring countries, plus Russia and the United States. We
worked for several years in this format, and we, when we Russians felt that that format was not working, we understood that we were just missing the Central Asian region and the neighbors of Afghanistan, Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, that are very vulnerable to the threats emanating from Afghanistan. So we made a step to include these countries, and in April 2016 we started a first meeting of this format. That's how this idea was adopted. And then the format was called Moscow format. Just don't think that Russia defines everything and is just a consensus matter. And I do not oppose the participation of Turkey alongside with other regional actors that could contribute much to the process, but this is an issue of agreeing between all the sides, between the Afghan government and other actors. If the majority is for this, we would see not only Turkey but other countries, but this is just premature.
Good afternoon, I'm from RT channel. Now, Mr. Khalilzad is in Turkey, who lasts till 20th of November. And it's not by chance, I guess. Or by chance, I don't know, after the Moscow meeting, what do you think would change during this trip? What would be done by the Americans? Who would they meet the Taliban? And about the representative of the U.S., it was said that that he will have the status of observer, but you said that he participated. What was his participation about? Did he say something or what? No, observers don't have the right to word. So you mean he just was there and was writing something or what? No, I just wanted to mention that his seat was not vacant, that someone was there. I myself did not understand it from the beginning as well. Well, he was the observer without the right to word, because only full-fledged participants had this right. As for will something change because of the Khalilzad trip, we have to ask him. We'll leave and we'll see. Well, he will be in Doha, he will be meeting somebody. Well, good luck. I think that this is the only task that he had formulated by the Mr. Pompeo. He is only in charge in national reconciliation because Alizade is the director of the Southeast Asian Department and she's continuing to participate in all the affairs except for promotion of national reconciliation. That was the decision of American leadership. Well, we know him for a long time and we'll see him one more time. He will be visiting us, I guess. Speaking globally, do Russia and the US have common goals here, or they may be an obstacle for... Because we have an American-led peace process and Russia-led peace process. Well, as it's been called.
So-called.
Well, let's not say so-called, because we are engaging in concrete steps and actions. We, as well as Iran, Pakistan, and China, we are actively interested in launching this peace process. That's why during several minutes I explained that Moscow format will not be, well, cannot only be held in Moscow, it may be held in Beijing, in Tehran, in Islamabad, in different places. As for do our goals coincide, we'll see it in the future. We have our ideas and intentions open, and according to Washington rhetoric, what they say, well, it may seem that they coincide, but the actions differ. Well, I did not respond to the question of the ISIS and who is sponsoring them, but I think during my previous interviews I've mentioned this, and we still have this reproach. But so the question of whether our goals coincide or not, this will be seen in the future. Mic to the speaker, please. Mic to the speaker, please. Well, they do not consider them as legitimate, and they prefer to talk not to the puppets, but to the owner, to the United States. How would you comment on how Russia sees the right role of the U.S.? What does Russia expect from the U.S.? How the United States, from the point of view of Russia, should act in order to launch this peace process? Well, I understand your question. I have two answers, short and long. The short answer is we want the U.S. so that after 17 years of their presence, we will not be in such a situation as we have it in Afghanistan now. This is a short answer. Well, we do not want and we don't like to lecture anybody on something because our colleagues from Washington like to do this. I would refrain from this, but although I have a lot of ideas and suggestions here. So, is that all? Please, your question. So, it's almost a Turkish conference. Please, go on. Go ahead. Mr. Kabulov, the ex-president of Afghanistan, Mr. Hamid Karzai, and ex-governor of the Balkh province, they said that they would come, but we haven't seen them. Well, I think I've already explained this, that we've been informed by Afghan president, Mr. Ghani, that we did not invite them, and we explain them that unfortunately the situation is like this. They were not the only ones who were ready to come and participate. There was a dozen of well-known Afghan figures, political figures, who were ready to come and to say and to voice their opinion. But, well, that's what we had. We in Russia are a persistent people. And they're coherent. My name is Grigory Sapozhnikov from TASS agency. Mr. Kabulov, I just wanted to clarify what terms do we talk about as for possible visit of a special representative of the U.S. on Afghanistan. We are speaking about the beginning of December. This was his proposal. I don't still know my agenda because I will have some events at the beginning of December with the participation of Mr. Lavrov, and in order to avoid an overlapping of those events, we'll try to arrange it. I'm now thinking on when we could be able to do this, but he proposed the beginning of December, and specific date would be communicated by the Department of Information. Thank you so much for your participation. And on your behalf, I would like to thank Mr. Kabulov for this brilliant press conference. Thank you so much for your participation. Goodbye.
You're inside Weekday World from communitypublicradio.org, and I'm your host, Don DeVar. Next, we're going to go to the press conference held Monday in New York at UN headquarters with the deputy spokesperson for the UN Secretary General, Farhan Haq.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. The Secretary General is just about to leave Paris, where he took part yesterday along with other world leaders in the commemoration of the 100th Armistice Day. In a tweet, he said he hoped that we would draw from its lessons and strengthen international cooperation to face the tests and threats of today and tomorrow. Yesterday afternoon, he spoke at the opening of the Paris Peace Forum along with French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Angela Merkel. In his remarks, the Secretary General said multilateralism was a necessity and that the United Nations remained at the center of the harmonization of efforts to achieve peace and sustainable development. He added that governments would not be able to meet their people's expectations for protection in the absence of international cooperation. This afternoon, the Secretary General opened the Internet Governance Forum with President Macron and Audrey Azoulay, Director General of UNESCO. He told the forum that technology should empower and not overpower us. The Secretary General also encouraged the forum to focus especially on innovative solutions that can increase trust in the Internet. Earlier today, the Secretary General met with President Macron at the Elysee. They discussed Africa, and particularly the Central African Republic and the Sahel, the situations in Yemen and Syria, and the forthcoming conference of the parties of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change in Poland next month. He also had bilateral meetings on Saturday with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and on Sunday with Chancellor Merkel and Palestinian Prime Minister Rami Hamdallah. The Secretary General will travel on Tuesday to Washington, D.C., where he will make remarks at as the Templeton Prize is presented to King Abdullah of Jordan. He will be back in the office on Wednesday. This morning, the Deputy Secretary General, Amina Mohammed, spoke to the members of the Peacebuilding Commission, which is focusing this year's annual session on the Sahel. She noted that this morning's session, as well as the joint session with ECOSOC tomorrow on climate security in the Sahel, are opportunities to reiterate commitment to addressing the multidimensional challenges in the Sahel region in a coordinated, comprehensive, coherent, and efficient way. Only a collective, integrated, and inclusive approach, owned and led by the countries of the region, will support sustained progress towards the lasting peace and development that are so urgently needed in the Sahel. Investing in this region is vital, she said, to prevent countries experiencing fragility today from becoming failed states of tomorrow. You can find her remarks online. We issued a statement over the weekend expressing the Secretary General's concern at President Maithripala Sirisena's decision to dissolve Sri Lanka's parliament and move to new parliamentary elections on the 5th of January 2019. The Secretary General underlines the utmost importance of respecting democratic processes and institutions and resolving differences in accordance with the rule of law and due process. He renews his call on the government to ensure peace and safety for all Sri Lankans and uphold its commitments to human rights, justice, and reconciliation. Our humanitarian colleagues are concerned by reports of ongoing hostilities and airstrikes in Syria's southeastern Deir ez-Zor governorate, which have resulted in civilian deaths and injury. Yesterday, four internally displaced people were reportedly killed in an airstrike on Hajin City. The attack follows reports of intensified airstrikes on residential areas in Hajin, in which at least 10 civilians were killed last Thursday. The United Nations continues to call on all the parties to the conflict to respect their obligations under international humanitarian law and international human rights law, including ensuring the protection of civilians and civilian infrastructure. In a statement issued yesterday, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, said that his agency supports the voluntary and sustainable repatriation of Rohingya refugees in safety and in dignity to their places of origin or choice, and will work with all parties towards this goal. The High Commissioner said that before making a choice of whether to return or not, the refugees reportedly verified by Myanmar as having the right to return should be allowed to visit their places of origin in Rakhine State or other places to which they might choose to return, so that they themselves can make an independent assessment of whether they feel they can return there in safety and dignity. He emphasized that the responsibility to prove those conditions rests with Myanmar. Although UNHCR does not believe current conditions in Rakhine State are conducive to the voluntary, safe, dignified, and sustainable return of refugees from Bangladesh, the agency remains committed to supporting the government of Myanmar's efforts to create such conditions under the terms of the Tripartite Memorandum of Understanding. UNHCR also remains deeply grateful to the government of Bangladesh as it continues to generously host Rohingya refugees until they can voluntarily return to Myanmar in safety and dignity. The World Health Organization reports that new measures to overcome challenges in the response to the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo are having a positive impact, although the outbreak remains dangerous and unpredictable. Led by the Ministry of Health, WHO and partners are using targeted, multidisciplinary teams to accelerate community engagement in eastern DRC's North Kivu province. The UN peacekeeping mission, MONUSCO, has also taken an active approach to armed groups operating in North Kivu, which has contributed to a period of calm in and around the city of Beni, although some attacks have continued in surrounding villages. Since the start of the outbreak in August, some 294 Ebola cases have been confirmed, with 170 deaths confirmed. Additional information is available on WHO's website. In Bonn, Germany, the UN Office for Outer Space Affairs today kicked off an expert meeting to use space data to respond to natural disasters. The meeting is focusing on increasing the use of big data, including social media and crowdsourced geographic information and satellite imaging to respond to challenges posed by natural hazards in African countries. You can find more information about this online. And that is it for me. Since you were here first, you get the first question.
I have a question about Ukraine, which is probably predictable. So yesterday, the occupying authorities in eastern Ukraine conducted the so-called elections of their new leaders. It is development that was widely condemned by the international community over this weekend, all last week and today as well, because those kind of so-called elections are violating the Ukrainian legislation and the Minsk agreements. Since I haven't seen any official public statement or reaction from the Secretary General, could you please inform us of his official position of those so-called elections?
Yes. As we have repeatedly stated, the implementation of the Minsk agreements, as endorsed by the Security Council, are the basis for the peaceful resolution of the conflict in eastern Ukraine. The Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, Rosemary DiCarlo, recalled in the Security Council on the 30th of October that election-related matters are addressed in the Minsk agreements as part of a comprehensive package, and they are under consideration in the existing international negotiating mechanisms. Any such measures taken outside Ukraine's constitutional and legal framework would therefore be incompatible with the Minsk agreements. We urge all concerned to avoid any unilateral steps that could deepen the divide or depart from the Minsk agreements. Yes, Edie.
Thank you, Farhan. One follow-up question on Filippo Grande's statement. Is there any indication from the government of Myanmar that refugees who did return to go and look at where they might be living or be resettled would be able to return to Bangladesh if they were unhappy with what they saw?
Well, that's a question really for the authorities in Myanmar. Under the Memorandum of Understanding, we want to make sure that everyone who is coming back will have the ability to come back in conditions where they can do so in safety and in dignity. So this is something that the other parties of the agreement, which is to say the UN High Commissioner for Refugees and the UN Development Program, are trying to work out with the government of Myanmar.
Okay, and on the latest violence that we're seeing right now between the Israelis and Hamas in Gaza, does the Secretary General have Any reaction?
Yes, the Secretary General was talking to reporters in Paris about the latest developments earlier today. One of the things he said is he warned about the risk of escalation of conflict, and he said the following: I hope that the recent incidents will be contained and that this escalation will not happen, because we would have a new war in Gaza, which would be an incredible tragedy. We need to avoid it at all cost. Yes, Errol.
Yeah, thank you, Farhan. Probably I missed the reading out of that, but you mentioned that the President Erdogan met with the Secretary General. To start with, I have a couple of questions. But what did they talk? Did they tackle the issue of gruesome murdering of Mr. Khashoggi?
As far as I know, that did not arise. They did cover a range of other topics, though.
Okay. In regard with that issue, my question is very simple. Since you have informed us, and I ask you several questions, more colleagues ask you, and you said we have to wait to see what is the development. Now, after all developments, the question is, will the Secretary General be a moral champion and pursue and be behind the full truth of uncovering what has happened to Mr. Khashoggi?
We have repeatedly encouraged the uncovering of the whole truth. The Secretary General is on record as calling for a thorough, prompt, and transparent investigation, and we're continuing to follow up to see whether that happens or not. And you'll have seen that Michelle Bachelet, the High Commissioner for Human Rights, has also spoken out about the need for an independent investigation, and I'd refer you to her remarks as well.
Yeah, but just if I can, with all this what has been said, it has been said before, exactly, you are repeating the same thing. But now we have a new developments, and would you say something new in the sense that Secretary General is also probably will use that and talk or go to Saudi Arabia, and we have a developments on Yemeni situation where the Western leaders are traveling actually there in try to stop the bloodshed of in Yemen. So what does the Secretary General plans to do in regard and that and put in that context?
Those are two different topics. I think I've said...
Still in the context.
I think I've said where we stand about Mr. Khashoggi's case. And that remains unchanged. Regarding Yemen, we have been trying to encourage all sides to put a halt to the fighting in Yemen. The Secretary General, again, speaking today in France, warned that the risk of famine remains very serious, and he stressed that Hodeidah is essential to guarantee access of aid. So he believes that there is a need to stop the fighting, and it's essential to do that and to start a true political dialogue. And he continues to push for that. We don't have any travels to announce at this point. Yes.
Right. What did he talk about with Turkey? Was it Syria? And also, independent investigation doesn't mean UN investigation, does it?
What the Secretary General called for was something that was prompt, transparent, and thorough. Whether anything further is needed and what the format of that should be, we would have to evaluate depending upon the current results of what's underway right now. Regarding the meeting with President Erdogan, they discussed a number of regional developments. Yes.
Secondly, in any of his comments, which we haven't all received yet, does he have a reaction to President Macron's statement that nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism?
Well, I believe that there were a number of very moving speeches made yesterday, and I think the Secretary General was very happy to be part of this commemoration. He made the case, as did President Macron, that the events of 100 years ago showed exactly why there's a need for international cooperation and for multilateralism. And he believes that what the French president said was very eloquent about that.
Follow up on that?
Sure.
Since we have all media reports that are indicating actually that President Trump was rebuked by President Macron on the issue of nationalism, where President Macron preferred some kind of patriotism, and having all the experience through this organization as well, what did the nationalism produce, for example, in Balkans, and that the Secretary General is very well involved in understanding that. What is his inclination toward patriotism or kind of positive nationalism?
Well, I think that kind of analysis is best left to you, not to us. Where we stand, of course, the Secretary General, his positions are laid out very clearly in the remarks that we put out yesterday, and includes his support for international cooperation and the entire framework of multilateral organizations. And with that, I bid you all a good afternoon.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.